Long live the First Amendment. Parler is back in business. The social networking site Parler reopened Monday after being shut down by Apple, Google, and Amazon last month. You know, they tried to suppress speech, but it didn't work. Ultimately, that tactic will fail. Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. Welcome to the Trish Intel Show. Parler is back in business. It's still not available on the Apple App Store, but the site is available online. So you can go to parler.com. It's allowing existing users to return to the platform this week. Next week, new users are going to be invited in. They're going to be able to start signing up beginning next week. And I imagine they're going to have a lot of new signups because I imagine a lot of people that had never even heard of it before have now heard of it. You know, I will just tell you anecdotally, and by the way, I am on Parler at Trish Regan. And anecdotally, what I've seen is actually a pretty nice community, a supportive community, at least the one that I have interacted with. And maybe it's just that I interact differently. Perhaps maybe I see different things on Parler, but Twitter is kind of a miserable place. I mean, you know, the negativity, the anger that I see sometimes from people there, it's very different than the mood and the vibe that you get on Parler. Now, that said, the government pointed the finger at Parler, and big tech, interestingly, pointed the finger at Parler as had somehow had a hand in the whole insurrection on January 6th, right? Somehow people were meeting online on Parler and planning and plotting. And that is the allegation. And they're saying Parler didn't do enough to stop it. I mean, dare I say that places like Facebook and Twitter have had their own share of things that they've never bothered to stop? I mean, I've had some pretty horrendous things that I have seen on Twitter. And, you know, they don't do a darn thing about it. They don't do it. You can alert them to it. Authorities can alert them to it. And they don't do anything. So it seems awfully convenient that you get all these big tech companies during the middle of this, right, where there was a lot of scrutiny on tech and a lot of pressure on these tech companies to kind of, you know, get it together, et cetera. And they're like, oh, not us. Nothing to see here. It's all Parler's fault. And so we're going to make sure that we pull Parler off of the Apple Store, App Store, off of Google. And then, of course, Amazon was the nail in the coffin when they decided to pull the plug on the servers. So Parler was shut down entirely. They did just continually blame, right, that company, saying that company, Parler, was the one who created this environment. I'm sorry. I mean, this environment exists whether you like it or not. And I actually do believe that social media has had a big hand in the sort of negativity and the extremism that you see out there. But I'm not pointing the finger at just one company, okay? I think the others have had a little something to do with it. Just a little. Anyway, you know, when you can blame it all on one company, why not? I think that was their thinking. But you saw Parler fire back. They did fire their CEO, but they did file a lawsuit. They got a new CEO, Mark Meckler, who's been a leading voice in the Tea Party movement. He's been hired as the interim CEO. And in a statement from the company or issued by the company, Mr. Meckler said, quote, Parler was built to offer a social media platform that protects free speech and values privacy and civil discourse. Parler is being run by an experienced team and is here to stay. We will thrive as the premier social media platform dedicated to free speech, privacy, and civil dialogue. That's important. We need some civil dialogue. I mean, right now, there's such a hysteria out there that people are just willing to shut down anything that they find somewhat controversial. And that's not how we should be. I mean, don't forget, Ron Paul was shut down by Facebook because they saw him as too problematic because, I don't know, he said the word liberty too much, the word patriot too much. I mean, what is the world coming to? Fortunately, he told me that was reversed. It was turned around. Actually, you can listen to American Consequences with Trish Regan, my other podcast, my weekly podcast where I do interviews. And Representative Paul was very forthcoming about that. He said, look, I have no idea. No idea. And yet you've got these big companies that are just willing so quickly to shut down voices, and it's not fair and it's not right. And I'm happy to see that Parler is back it's the right thing because, again, you know, we should be embracing all kinds of speech, civil speech. All right. I'm not going out on a limb here. I've said before, and I'm going to say it again. Why can't we get some extremists like in the middle? I mean, why do we have to have such hate, right, coming out of the left? I don't like that. I don't appreciate it. It's not right. Parler's back. Good news there. We got a lot more to talk about today. Don't go anywhere. Wow. Just wow. Bitcoin is just on this total surge, a meteoric rise, nearly $50,000 a coin. So what's really going on here? I mean, I think a few things, right? And I'm going to relate it back to Parler for a second, because look at how quickly they can shut you down, right? They can just pull the plug on your server. And all of a sudden, as a company, you can't be in business anymore. Parler, by the way, is not telling us who their current server partner is, but needless to say, Amazon Web Services did pretty unceremoniously pull the plug on them, which got me thinking, right, about this uptick that we've seen, this surge, right, about 60% since 2020 in Bitcoin. I've always been fascinated by Bitcoin. I can remember going back to 2012 when I was first reporting on this. By that time, it was still in its infancy stages, because I was actually at the very first business in America that took Bitcoin as payment. It was actually a nightclub in New York City. And I remember being there on a rainy Sunday night to witness all of this. It was really, really fascinating. But Bitcoin was started sort of by these rebels, theoretically, who didn't believe in having any kind of central banking forces, right? Where you had central bankers that were determining the value of currency. And so the whole idea was to bring this back to the people. And the reason it relates to Parler is because what's fascinating about this is it's a peer-to-peer operation. So if you're in the pure play Bitcoin, theoretically, they couldn't come after your money. I mean, they could go after your JPMorgan Chase account, right? Just like they could go after your server if you're with Amazon Web Services, but they're not going to be able to go after your Bitcoin. And so I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing this excitement about it. It's also the reality of the moment where we're dealing with inflation and we're going to continue to deal with inflation. And so people are looking for alternatives to gold, of which Bitcoin increasingly seems to be one. And then there's the other factor in all this, which is that increasingly you're seeing more establishment types, more big banking types, asset managers come on board. So all of this combined means, you know what? Bitcoin is proving to be a kind of new sort of gold, right? A new kind of currency. It was just a few weeks ago that it was topping 40,000. Here we are nearing 50,000. And I suspect it's going to continue moving higher. Like gold, think about it. Bitcoin has no intrinsic value, right? The technology is remarkable, but the actual currency, the cryptocurrency itself, has no real value. And it's still too volatile, right, to be used as a real currency. I mean, after all, you're not going to buy a new boat or a new car with Bitcoin, because gosh, what if your Bitcoin goes up 20% in the next week or two or three? And then you just bought that car and you're going to think to yourself, well, I paid a lot more for that car than I was willing to or wanted to. So consequently, because it lacks stability, and you could argue that's because you don't have a central bank there tweaking it, but because it lacks stability, you don't have a ton of people able to actually transact in this. Now, Tesla said it's going to start taking it. You've got BlackRock, meanwhile, MassMutual, Bank of New York Mellon, all getting into this space. Tesla, as I said, MasterCard. Bitcoin is now being viewed by many institutional players as a commodity in which they want to invest. So that's a big deal. Over the weekend, we saw it go way up, 5%. 49,726 was the new high. Little off that in yesterday's session, but we're watching very carefully again all of this volatility today. The move or the momentum is definitely in a positive direction for this cryptocurrency. And it's amazing, right? Because when you think about these establishment players that are getting in right now, don't forget, Bitcoin itself was designed to be anti-establishment, the anti-establishment currency. So it's interesting that the BlackRocks, which control almost half the size of the U.S. economy worth of assets, it's over $9 trillion worth of assets under BlackRock's control, they are now getting into this space. Bitcoin, I want to take a moment now and just sort of tell you about where it came from. Bitcoin was believed to have been started by this group of engineers, computer engineers, or maybe one, but probably a whole bunch of them, under this alias called Satoshi Nakamoto. And they began developing this. There was a white paper that came out back in the year 2007. Mr. Nakamoto, or this group of engineers, whoever they were, allegedly hid a finite number of coins all over the internet. And so you have these sophisticated mathematical algorithms that are performed and must be performed by these computers in order to essentially mine these coins. They're mining them like you would gold right out of the ground. The only difference is you're mining them on the internet. And these mathematical equations, they increasingly become more and more and more sophisticated as the supply dwindles, thereby making the coin that much more scarce. Of course, it requires a certain suspension, right, of one's belief. You just kind of have to sort of go with it at some point, because if you really start to think about it, you're like, well, wait a second, who is this Satoshi Nakamoto and how can I be invested in some currency who I don't even know really who the founder of this thing was? How can I be invested in a currency when I don't know whether or not the whole thing could be hacked, brutally hacked, and all come crumbling down? Then again, when you think about just our regular bank accounts, right, every day, you also kind of are putting a tremendous amount of faith in the system, because you have to believe that that money is going to be there for you and it's not going to suffer from some kind of hack attack. Bitcoin transactions, they are mostly anonymous, but not entirely. I mean, if the feds really want to track you down, they're going to be able to track you down. But typically, the blockchain technology that governs this crypto is pretty anonymous, right? You can do some research, but a lot of people like it for that reason. And one of the reasons you've seen a lot of people get into this, especially in the early days, I remember when I was first reporting on it, and a lot of people that were in the sort of dark side of the web, the Silk Road. I don't know if anybody remembers that. Silk Road was a popular website and sort of the underbelly of the internet that had a lot of drug trafficking, et cetera. And so how do you pay for drugs online? Oh, you use Bitcoin, because the currency really couldn't be easily tracked. So that was sort of how it initially started off. And of course, the Federal Reserve started getting a little bit worried. They're still worried today. They're like, wait a second, what's going on here? Because they want to have the ability to track, right, the exchange of funds between individuals or countries. And, you know, you need to be able to do that, right? If you're a government, well, you want to be able to do that, I should say. And so they want to make sure you're paying your taxes. They want to make sure that there's no illicit fund activity where, you know, you're buying weapons or drugs or anything like that. And so, you know, the government's looking at this and they're not too psyched about it. You are seeing some efforts to develop digital currencies. China certainly has the best effort underway right now. Surprise, surprise, to get a digital currency. But the U.S. is working on one, too. And in the meantime, you've got this Bitcoin with no central bank controlling its value. Its value is based entirely on whatever the peer-to-peer community is willing to assign it in value. And lately, they're really willing to assign it value. Again, noting that since 2020, Bitcoin has jumped 60%. You got the bulls all speculating that this is the new gold. It is here to stay. Bears are worried that it's the biggest bubble in recent history, or perhaps the biggest bubble since the tulip mania of the Netherlands in the mid-1600s. I don't know. What do you think? I tend to be more optimistic on this currency because I love the technology and I love the blockchain technology. And I think that there probably is, over the long term anyway, some room still to go. But I'm curious to find out whether or not you're a buyer or seller of Bitcoin. I want you to go to the website, trishintel.com, log on, stay in touch with me. Let me know what you're thinking. You can comment on the stories. And coming up, we got to talk about Andrew Cuomo, right? Because Andrew Cuomo is trying to backpedal now. Oh, he was misinterpreted, he says. I'm sorry. This guy just needs to resign. Okay, so Cuomo now, Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, is trying to say, no, it's just a misinterpretation. My staff didn't really mean that. Whoa, buddy. So it's on record. His like right-hand person there on his staff came out and gave this call just moments before the Associated Press reported that there were actually 9,000 people more, 40% more than they ever had admitted previously, that went into nursing homes with COVID and were sent there by the state. So she gets on this call with Democratic lawmakers just moments before this news gets released. And she explains that, yeah, oh, this did happen. Actually, the reason it happened was because, well, this is even better. She didn't have a reason for why it happened, right? She explained that the reason they never told everyone back then was because they were worried that the Trump administration might prosecute them. I mean, so they were worried about their own political careers. And she cited, well, you know how he's going after the governor of New Jersey and the governor of Michigan and the governor of California. We figured he'd go after us. What were we to do? Right. I'm sorry. That is not a reason. So now Cuomo's out trying to do damage control, saying, ah, no, this is misinterpreted. No, no, no. We can read. We saw her statement. We know what she said. And we know how lousy you political types are. I mean, he really, in my view, has no choice but to resign. He probably won't because, listen, you're a pompous you-know-what when you get to that spot anyway. If you're him, and we have seen this over and over again, the audacity and just plain old disgustingness of him to be willing to accept an Emmy Award for his television performances during all that as so many people died. You know, if nothing else, the guy's got to give up the Emmy. Okay. And he's got to get voted out of office. But if he had any decency whatsoever, he and his entire team there would resign. Coming up next, Pelosi, speaking of lack of decency, she really seems to want this division that we're suffering from in our country to just go on and on and on. Wait to hear what she's doing next. Well, 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 you know, I said, what are they going to do next? And I suspected it might be trying to go after him with the 14th Amendment and impeach him again. But instead, this is some kind of interim step, I suspect. The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, saying on Monday that she intends to establish a, quote, outside independent 9/11 type commission to investigate the riot on Capitol Hill last month. This is in her weekly letter that she sends out to her colleagues there in the Congress. Anyway, in this letter, Speaker Pelosi wrote that the commission will investigate and, quote, report on the facts and causes related to the January 6, 2021 domestic terror attack upon the U.S. Capitol complex and relating to the interferences with the peaceful transfer of power. She also went on to write, it's clear from his findings, she's referring to the general there that had been doing some of the investigation, that we must get to the truth of how this happened. Forget the fact that the former president has been acquitted, 57-43 in the U.S. Senate. 7 Republican senators did vote with Democrats in favor of conviction. Nonetheless, they didn't have enough of a majority, and so he has been acquitted. But it's not over. And my concern right now for this country is if it's not over, it's like this scab, right? This wound, you just keep peeling at it and picking at it, and it's going to get worse and worse. Instead of moving on and moving forward as a nation, they can't let this go. I mean, in some ways, I guess they have to have somebody to hate. And he's certainly that. He's certainly that. But I fear for the country because I would like us to be able to focus on the things that are important. And by that, I mean getting kids back to school more than one day a week earlier than this summer. By that, I mean getting our economy back on track. By that, I mean making sure this vaccine is plentiful and available and widespread throughout our country. By that, I mean giving Americans more and more opportunities. Instead, we're going to get bogged down in all of this nonsense. I'm sick of it. You know what? I did this story last because, frankly, I'm just sick of talking about it. It's really just nauseating at this point. These people cannot get away from this. And so we're going to have to revisit this over and over and over again. Is this what they think works? This is what they think keeps their base excited. I mean, I heard from some Democrats that were kind of depressed. They were kind of down and out because he'd been acquitted. I don't know what they thought would happen, but you know, this cheers them up. Is that her idea? You're just going to cheer up your base? I'm sorry, but we need to actually focus on what matters, which means Americans and the American economy. Make sure you go to TrishaIntel.com. Sign up for my emails right there. Make sure you download and subscribe to this podcast and tell your friends. I'll see you right back here tomorrow.